All right, Chevra, yeah, yesterday we talked about two opinions in the Ramban. We were discussing why is it that our Brisa, which says over here that if you have two adjacent properties, one where they're growing grapes, one where they're growing wheat, and the grapes are encroaching on the wheat, which is going to create a situation of Kavaya Kerem. The Gemara says that the Baal HaKerem is the one who has to build the wall between them, and if he doesn't, he's obligated to pay for the Kavaya Kerem that ensues. Medina de Garmi. It's not Mazik Mamish. It's like, it's not Grama Benazikin. It's not totally causative and tangential. He plays a role, but not central. So, according to the Machlekes Tanoim called Garmi, are you obligated to pay or not? And we, according to those who hold that Don Dina de Garmi, you'll be obligated to pay. So, we had the question that Ramban raised yesterday, which is, why is this called Garmi in the first place? If my grapes are encroaching on your wheat, that sounds like Mazik Mamish. I'm getting closer to you. I'm about to damage you. Why is that only Garmi in the first place? What's tangential? How is this indirect? This seems to be somewhat direct. So Ramban, if you remember from yesterday, had two terutzim. Ramban yesterday said, and it's kuntres dina de Garmi. One answer is that because there's another component here. In order for it to become kelaim, it's not enough that the grapes encroached upon the grain. There has to be an approval of the Balabayas. He has to be happy about it. He has to be miyayish from building a wall. If he's not been miyayish from building a wall, then there's no kelaim. And that yeush is always tangential. That's never caused by the grapes marching towards the grain. The grapes march towards the grain. That doesn't create the yeush. It's only when he actually is happy about it. That happiness, that acceptance of this reality, of the situation, is what creates the Yisur Kalayim. That's always tangential. So that's why, or somewhat, right? So that's why this is not entirely tangential. It's not garment, you know, grandma. My grapes are marching towards your grain, but there's a part of it that's secondary, that's outside the, you know, from the action itself, and therefore it's considered to be garmi. The Ramban had another teretz. Over here are three lines in the bottom of his test on the sheet from yesterday. There's no nezek at all. Because kelaim only comes about, you know, after the two are together for some time. Then the Yisur kelaim comes. So it doesn't come immediately. Not right away. So we explained yesterday, in the name of Reb Shmuel Rizovsky, over here are his yod, in the Kedusha of Shmuel, that what they're arguing about is what is the nature of the Yisur kelaim. According to the first teretz in the Ramban, the nature of the Yisur kelaim is when the grain and the grapes get mixed. Immediately upon being mixed, you have kelaim. And it's also, ooh, then it's, you know, other mamazik or mamma mamazik mamish. So we said no, because there's another component in this mixture, you know, to create kalim, which is you have to have nichusa de balabais. He has to be accepted. That's always tangential. That's always outside of the box. And therefore, that's not directly as a result of your actions or the actions of your grapes. That's always going to be considered garmi. But then the other opinion is that kalayim is not triggered by the mixture, by the irbuvia itself, but rather by the two growing together. That takes time to mature, to happen. It doesn't happen right away. That's what the ika de sa'ka daite means. She'en kan nezek al machmas grama, she'afak afam shu'ayin ma'zikma satfu al she'en garmin le'isr she'yavoy. It doesn't happen immediately. It happens later when they actually grow together. Oh, so that's why it's indirect. That's why it's garmi and not grama. Now, it's not grama, not olma mazik mama and mazik mamish. It's not grama. It's not, I'm not touching this guy's stuff. My grapes are marching towards your grain. So I have a say, you know, a hand in what's going on, but it's certainly somewhat indirect because it doesn't happen immediately. Have you hear the two perspectives on kelaim? Is it when they mix or is it when they grow together? Two explanations to why kelaim over here with the grapes marching towards the grain is garmi, not olma mazik, not grama. You know, that was how we explained it yesterday. However, I think there's another way of explaining the two opinions over here. In the Ramban, my own other Achronim suggest along these lines, not exactly like this, but I think this is a possibility. And that's in light of another Mishnah Kelaim. However, turn the page on the sheet of Mar Mekomis from yesterday. It's a Mishnah Kelaim, Perek Zayin, Mishnah Dalet. The Mishnah says, right, you need two things in order to create kelaim. Well, really three, but two. You need grapes and grain, so you can call that two or one, or whatever. You need something. You need grapes and grain mixing together, and you need nichusa de balabais. What if I am happy that your grapes and grain got mixed, but it's not mine, it's yours? So the grape and grain get mixed. Neither party themselves is aware of it or happy about it, but a third party is happy about it. I don't like you. Happy to see you suffer, you know. So, Hamasakek is gafno agabit fuwaso shokavero. A person puts his grapes on top of the two of his friends. Harizek kiddush. V'chai brach v'yusoy. He's obligated for it. Rabbi Shimon Oimrim, ain other machdish dravash eno shaloi. I cannot aser your grain by the fact that my grapes grew over your grain. I can aser my grapes because now tvua is growing together with my grapes. So my grapes are aser, but your grain is permitted because I'm happy about it. You're not happy about it. So mine is aser, yours is permitted because in order for yours to become prohibited, you need to be happy about it because ein adam oiser davar she'enu shaloi. A principle that the Gemara has in a few places based on this Mishnah and Kelaim. With regards to Kelaim, Kelaim, one of the ingredients that you need is nichus of the balabais. He has to be happy about it. That was what we saw yesterday from the Mishnah Tosis quotes at the top of Beis Mabeis. If I see it growing together and I say, when I get up to it, I'm going to rip it out, but I'm not happy about it. It's never Kelaim Kelaim. You have to be consent to the reality or be, you know, accept the reality. If I plan on removing it, it's not Kelaim Kelaim. So what if I don't plan on removing it, but you do? It takes two to tango, right? The kiloim is the grapes and grain. The grape guy is happy. The grain guy is not happy. So the grapes become prohibited, the grains do not. And the fact that the grape guy is happy doesn't aser the grain because ein adam oiser dover she'eno shaloi. I cannot aser that which is not mine. The Gemara has this, the Rosh. Over there in that Mishnah, Masechtas Kelaim, not to be confused with the Rush. Those are two separate Mefarshim on Mishnayos, if you ever learned Mishnayos. Not in the Kahati, or even in the Yochan Ubayas, but in the back of the Gemara, in the back of the Shas. So you have two commentaries. Usually you have the Rosh and the Rambam. So the Rosh is a very formidable commentary. So the a little bit more dense than we're used to. So it's a little harder to learn. And not as explored as we're used to. You know, most Rishonim and the Gemara have there's a lot of secondary literature about them. The Rash and Zeroyim and Taurus and all that, not as explored. But the Rash, over here, quotes from the Gemara Masechtas Chulin, that this applies elsewhere. Lamashal, I like to give this example. You know, good walls make good neighbors, right? If you have a good wall, you'll have a good relationship with your neighbor. The more that the neighbors... Baruch Hashem, now I have good neighbors. But nice neighbors. We have had problems with neighbors in the past. But not my fault. Anyway, yeah. When we first moved into our house in Passaic, it's our neighbor, we cut down the trees. I mean, you can't have trees overhanging the garage or overhanging the house. It's very bad because then squirrels could crawl on your roof. If you have squirrels on your roof, that means you could have squirrels in the roof. Squirrels on the roof end up with squirrels in the roof, which is very bad. Anyway, you can get mold on the roof and all that. So you can't have branches overhanging the roof. So when we moved into the house, it was like a rainforest. It was absurd. So we had to cut the trees off. So here we are, you know, young, I guess, frum-looking people, cutting the leaves off the house. The next-door neighbor said, "Don't you know trees make air? Go back to Flatbush." I'm not from Flatbush. Anything about Flatbush? Like, I had an arborist there, like a tree guy. Like, you know, we love the trees. You know, I know they make air. But anyway, so yeah, you can have problems with neighbors. So let's say a guy hates his neighbor's dog. He cannot stand the dog. So he's a great solution. We said yesterday he could open up the gate and let the dog run away. But the gate, you know, the dog is a good dog. He's loyal. Nice meat of the dogs. So he's gonna stick around. The dogs aren't going anywhere. So what can you do? A better etza. Bow down to the dog. What happens if you bow down to the dog? It became avodah zarah now. I bow down to the holy dog. Now the dog is avodah zarah. The guy's got to get rid of it. He can't keep it. So I violated avodah zarah. That's true. Pretty bad. But I asked for this dog. Can you do that? No. The Gemara says you can't, not a solution. Ein adam oiser davar she'eno shaloi. You cannot prohibit that which belongs to your friend. So that's the principle the Mishnah has over here in Kelaim. However, the Rosh and the other Rishayim ask a basic question. Chevra, let's say I don't like you. What can I do to get back at you for whatever you did to me? I have a better solution. I'll sneak into your house in the middle of the night, right before Shabbos, Thursday night, after you spent the whole day cooking for Shabbos, and I'll drop a little chazer shmaltz in one of your Shabbos dishes, a few of your Shabbos dishes, and then call you 5 minutes before Shabbos. By the way, I dropped chazer shmaltz into all your food. It's all aser. No time to get takeout, no time to go anywhere else. You know, so I asked all your food upon you. So can you say, Ein Adam Oyser Dover Sheino Shaloi? I dropped Chazer Shmaltz into all of your food, but we're going to say, I can't answer that which is not mine, just like I can't bow down to your dog and make it into a Vayder Zara. I can't be happy that your grain and grapes mix together and therefore create Kalaya Kerem. So to over here, I cannot create Basa B'chala of a Machala Sasurois by dropping Chazer Shmaltz or milk into your chicken soup because Ein Adam Oyser Dover Sheino Shaloi. That's absurd. That's absurd. Or let's say you have an animal that you plan on shechting for supper, and I come and I shoot it, right? Well, mazik for sure. Can you say, well, ain't other mice of devil shen shalai, I can still shech the chicken and have it for supper? No, the chicken isn't available now. There's nothing you can do about it. Why? Ain't other mice of devil shen shalai. Heaven's a good kasha, no? What's the difference? What's the difference between bowing down to your dog that I can't make it into a vayda zara and dropping milk into your chicken soup that I can create basim b'chalov, even though you're not happy about it? So Taisus in Yevamos asks this kasha. Taisus in Yevamos says what I think is the classical, most intuitive teretz. And that is, you have to distinguish between something that requires machshava and something that doesn't require machshava. Ein adam oyser dover sheino shaloi. The Imtaymar says Taisus, my shna, minoisin nevela or chelev, betav shil shachaveir. Why is this different than putting nevela or treif meat into your dishes? Shenesa, of course, that's also. When it requires thought, you say, like a person who's mishtachavet to someone else's behemoth. That requires thought for avodah zara. If I happen to lose my quarter near your dog and I bow down on the ground to get my quarter back, that's not called avodah zara. It would be unfortunate to bow down and pick up a quarter in front of a totem pole. That would be quite unfortunate, because then it would be a marasayan of avodah zara, right? Not a good idea. But if I happen to lie down, right, you're not allowed to bow down on the floor that we have in the shul, right? That's where we all put mats in front of our face on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, because you're not allowed to bow down on the floor where you have stone in front of you, because it looks like you're bowing down to an Avodah Zarah. So you're not allowed to do that. You have to put something. People think it's like a knee guard. That's to protect your knees from dust. That's not why we hand out the paper towels before Kairim on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. By Aleinu, by the Avodah. The truth of the matter is, if you wear a talus, you don't need the whole paper towel shtick. I didn't grow up with people handing out paper towels. In yeshiva, I remember it, but not before then. I think the answer is people used to cover their face with their talus. People hand me a paper towel, I'd give it back to them. You don't need a paper towel. I don't remember a chef ever using a paper towel. Because you cover your face with your talus. It's an easy solution. For people who don't have a towel, so then you bachrim, that's why in yeshiva, they need a paper towel. But you're not supposed to put the paper towel under your knees. The paper towel goes in front of your face to protect you from bowing down onto the stone or concrete. Maybe even if there's carpet there glued to the floor, you also need a paper towel. Something in between. What if I lose a quarter on the floor, under the bed? I have to put a paper towel in between my face and the floor before bowing down? No, that's not that. Because it requires machshava. Machshava is what it's all about. I have to have a mind to bow down. Oh. So if you have to have a mind to bow down, when you need Kavana, or you need machshava, ain't other maisa davashena shaloi. When it doesn't depend on machshava, it depends on a maisa. Basa b'chalav is a reality, not a thought process, or something I create through my thoughts. It's either it's here or it's not here. Whether you like it or you don't like it, then we don't apply the rule. Ain't other maisa davashena shaloi. And here, by kiloim, by avodah zara, you require machshava. There we say, ain't other maisa davashena shaloi. By basa b'chalav, by taruvis, all that kind of stuff. By nevela, doesn't require machshava. So there we say, of course, Adam Oyser Dover Sheino Shaloi. You're mazik, you're not nice, you're not a good guy. But I killed your animal, but that's not, we don't say the rule there, Adam Oyser Dover Sheino Shaloi. So that's what the Rosh first quotes from Taisis. Yesh mechalk, and look over here on the second line, Oyser Dover. Bein Isra atoli b'machshava, l'shari sur. We have to distinguish between Isra that depends on machshava, as opposed to other Isurim. Dekaloyim tulim b'nichus of the ba'alim. Kalaim, in order to create kalaim, you have to have the mixture of the grain and the grapes, and the bialim have to be happy about it. By the Zara 2, it depends on your thought. It depends on machshava to avodah zara. The Rash disagrees, and he says, no, that's not the case. Because even by something which requires machshava, Adam oisa davar she'eino shelo. What's his proof? His proof is, even by a davar that requires machshava, Adam oisa davar she'eino shelo, it's from a far off place, probably not something we're familiar with unless you learned the Perikei Matzius recently. But the Gemara there discusses a paraduma. Paraduma is not allowed to be lost, worked. Asher lo yala aleha oil. It's not allowed to be worked. What if it gets worked? How does it get worked? A fly lands on the paraduma. Now it's working, carrying the fly. Does that mean it's a paraduma that's been worked? That's why if you find the paraduma, once in a while you see in the news, they discovered some red cow somewhere. And the Bialim claim it's a paraduma. So they have to seal it off from the rest of the, if they're right, I don't know, you know. I haven't examined any of these cows, but not that I would know how to identify a paraduma, but it has to be sealed off because it can't be worked. If it's worked, it's disqualified from being a paraduma. What if it gets worked by accident? A fly lands on it. So then, is that a worked paraduma? No, it has to be something the Bialim are happy about. What if I work your paraduma? If I work your paraduma against your will, it also becomes aser. It's a worked paraduma, even though you're not happy about it. Ah, but it requires the mashav of the balabais. If a fly lands on it, no one's happy about it. That's not a worked paraduma. It has to be worked. But if I work your paraduma, it becomes a worked paraduma. When there we don't say, Adam Oysa, Ein Adam Oysa, Davar She'eino Shelo. So says the Rash, you see there are certain circumstances where even if machshava is involved, even if machshava is required, like by a paraduma, if a fly lands on it, no one's happy about it. That's not a worked paraduma. It has to be worked with intention. What if I have intention to work your paraduma? I aser it. We don't say, Ein Adam Oysa, Davar She'eino Shelo by the paraduma. So says the Rash, you see from there, there are instances where we say, even when machshav is required, Adam Oysa, Davar She'eino Shelo. The Rash says, no, Avodah Zarah, Kalayim are different, because the Pasuk says, it has to be yours. Look over here on the three lines in the bottom. Sherim Mishum Deloi Necha, Kol Hani, Hainu, Taim, Agavi, Avodah Zarah, Lav, Shmei, Takrubis, Avodah Zarah, Kevin, She'eino Shelo. It's not called a carbon for the Avodah Zarah, because it doesn't belong to you. Agavi, Kalayim, Hainu, Taima, Desivloi, Sizra, Mazirei, Denechle, V'ha'ein, Adam, Nenev, Lonechle, Shalacherim. So it's exeris hakosiv, the siv karmacha, your karam, not that of your friend. So the Tosis and the Rash have a fundamental machlekes, it's a very famous machlekes, harishonim, between Tosis and the Rash. Tosis and Yevamis, the Rash and Mesechus Kalayim, Rabbi Kiva Eger makes a big deal about this. Machlekes harishonim, whether Adam oisa davar she'eino shelo when machshava is required. Tosis' opinion is that whenever machshav is required, ein adam oiser davar she'eino shelo. When can I prohibit something that belongs to you if no machshav is required? The Rash disagrees. He holds even when machshav is required, there are circumstances where adam oiser davar she'eino shelo. As you see by paraduma. Paraduma requires intention to work the paraduma in order to be called a worked paraduma, which is disqualified. What if I work your paraduma? It becomes a worked paraduma. Even though machshav is required, because adam oisa davar she'eino shelo, I can't prohibit that which is not mine, even when machshav is required. Why is then avodah zarah? I can't bow down to your dog and get rid of it. I can't create kalayim on your property. That's exeris hakosav. Exeris hakosav. Maybe it's not so much exeris hakosav. You know, maybe it's because the machshav there is different. See, we could argue that there are two roles that machshav plays, and this is what the Rash means. This is how Rabbi Kiva Eger learns Pshat over here in the Rash. It's quoted over here in this long Rabbi Kiva Eger in Hilchos Shabbos. Rabbi Kiva Eger learns Pshat in the Rash. No. Even when Machshava is required, other Moshe Devash and Shulah, but there's two types of Machshava. Sometimes Machshava is the Etzem Iser. Sometimes Machshava is a condition, meaning it's really action-oriented, but there's a condition that you have to have Machshava. And that's what the Rash is distinguishing between these two categories. If the whole Easter is created by Machshava, Ein Adam Oisa Davar She'eino Shelo. That's Avodah Zarah. That's Kilayim. There's no Kilayim. There's no Avodah Zarah without Machshava. However, there are certain other Isurim, like Paraduma maybe, that it's really the action-oriented. You know, it's the action of working the Paraduma, but there's a condition. Someone's got to be happy about it. Then maybe anyone can fill that role, either the Bialim or someone else. And we don't say Ein Adam Oisa Davar She'eino Shelo when Machshava is tangential. If Machshava is critical, then everyone agrees Ein Adam Oisa Davar She'eino Shelo when Machshava is required. Tosis disagrees with Rashi. He goes, whenever Machshava is required in any form whatsoever, Ain't other ma'aseh davar shenu shaloi. Machshava requires, you know, the if machshava plays a role in answering this item, you need the machshava of the ba'alim. Whether it's a requirement, whether it's the whole, you know, source of the iser, it doesn't matter. The Rash distinguishes, not always. He says, look at paraduma. Paraduma, I can prohibit your paraduma, even though machshava is required, because machshava is a condition, not the etzem ha'iser, as opposed to tekruvus avei dezer, as opposed to kalayim, where the whole iser stems from machshava. So cover yet, we have a machloket between the Rash and Tosfos. We have a general rule, by kalayim, ein adam ma'aseh davar shenu shaloi, machshava is required here, I cannot prohibit your kalayim. Tosfos said, why is that different than cooking, putting chaz v'shmaltz into your chicken soup? Because there, no machshava is required. Machshava is required, ein adam ma'aseh davar shenu shaloi. The Rash says, not always. Maybe by kalayim that's true, but there are other circumstances where machshava might play a role, but it's tangential, or it's, you know, conditional, it's a condition, not really the etzem ha'oyser, in which case we could say, even though machshava is required. Rabbi Kiva Eger claims that this is relevant to Hilchos Shabbos, where? So chevra, you got to know this. Pay attention, please. Otherwise you'll embarrass yourself. First Shabbos you're married. What do you do if you want to heat up food Shabbos morning? Chevra, how do you heat up food Shabbos morning? You embarrass yourself. Joking. You did, sort of did, sort of didn't. There's two Isurim, not to be confused. One is called Shehiyah. Shehiyah means you're not allowed to leave uncooked food on an open flame going into Shabbos. Why? Lest I see my uncooked food is not ready for my meal Friday night, I might come to heat it up faster and violate Bishul or Havara, kindling, making a flame in the first, you know, on Shabbos in the first place. So let's say I have potato kugel. Chowent. I'm making for the meal Friday night. I see it's not going to be ready. And the guests are getting ready for the main dish. So now I might come and say, let's say it's Dvar Torah. I'll go into the kitchen, turn up the flame. Time to come back. Now the kugel will be cooked again. What are we talking about? A guy who's going to be Machal Shabbos? No, it's not. I forget it's Shabbos. So that's where the problem of Shehiyah can be solved with a blech. What does the blech do? The blech covers the flame. And reminds me, why is this, you know, tin foil here? Why is this metal plate here that's covering the flame? To remind me, not to stoke the coals. Strange. Why would it be there? Remind me, don't turn up the flame. You're not allowed to do it at Shabbos. You say, I could remind myself of that a different way. I'll tie a red string around my finger. I'll put a little petek, a little note on the microwave. Shabbos hayoyim. No, it doesn't work. Chazal established, you know, in this way. Has to be, you cover the flame. Well, if the whole fear is I might raise the flame, maybe I should cover the dials too. Good idea. Is it just enough to cover the dials? That's where I raise the flame anyway. Yeah, but that's not where you look to see how fast it's cooking. You really are going to look at the fire. So that's a machlokes in Rav Moshe and Rav Aaron Cutler. Rav Moshe's opinion was covering the flame is enough. You don't have to cover the dials. Sometimes you go into people's house like that. You see uncooked food on an open flame going to Shabbos, but it's not open. It's covered with a blech that doesn't cover the dials. Rav Moshe held me ikar, then that's enough. Rav Aaron Cutler held, no, the ikar is the dials. To be chayshish for both opinions, they create blechs that come out and cover the dials too. But that is not required, me'ikar adin. We really pass like Rav Moshe. It's enough if you just cover. In Lakewood, they pass like Rav Aaron Cutler. Everywhere else, they pass like Rav Moshe. It's enough if you just cover the flame. That's known as Shehiyah. Now there's another exception to the rule, known as Kidei Rechaisa, or another yeshiva's Kid Rechaisa, which means a raw pot. See, there are some dishes that are no way going to be ready for Friday night, chulent. You can cook chulent on high for an hour, it will not get ready. I've tried it. We once had an onion in the house, the chulent wasn't ready. We were supposed to have it Friday night. I told my wife, turn it up on high, let's see what happens. It was not ready. You can't, it doesn't work. So even if you cook it on high, it won't get ready for the meal Friday night. So then, even if it's an uncovered flame, it's allowed. So that's why you'll hear, sometimes people put raw meat right into a dish. That's known as the raw pot. Kidra Chaisa means a raw pot. A raw pot of food right before Shabbos is never going to get cooked for the meal Friday night, so there's no fear that you're going to raise the flame to have it ready for the meal. So then it could even be on an uncovered flame. So that's why some people either put their cholent up Friday morning, make sure it's fully cooked before Shabbos. Well, if it's fully cooked before Shabbos, or even if it's cooked kamaycho ben derusoy, which means a third cook or a half cooked. Ben derusoy was a guy who was always on the run. Rabbi Willow likes to call him the Jesse James of the Gemara. He was always eating food on the run, half-cooked, a third cooked, half-cooked. So if it's anyway, certainly if it's fully cooked, Friday going into Shabbos. We have no fear you're going to raise the flame to cook it faster. So either if it's fully cooked, or I have a blech there, you're okay. See, if you want to put up your chulin until 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you better make sure that there's a blech there, or it's fully cooked or half cooked, yeah. Or you can put your chulin up right before Shabbos with a piece of raw meat. Because either way, it's not going to be ready for the meal Friday, and that's going to take a long time to cook. That's known as a heter of Kidra Chais or Kedera Chais. Not all the Paiskim love that heter, because our heating implements cook really fast. You can take a piece of meat and cook it in 5 minutes, you know, no matter how thick it is, an hour. We have fancy cooking, you know, utensils. In the times of Gemara, raw meat took a long time to cook. In our settings, raw meat doesn't take so long to cook. If you're not careful about it, you're not a mafunak about how you're going to cook the meat, you know, that it should be steak tartare or something. You know, you want to cook it, push it, a piece of meat, put it on in the barbecue, you could cook stuff fast. So maybe if it's a crock pot, even if you put it on high, it won't cook that fast because it's a slow cooker by definition. Okay, so you put a piece of raw meat in the slow cooker right before Shabbos, kidra chaisa, raw pot, it's not going to be ready for the meal Friday night anyway. Fine. Okay, that's the Issur of Shehiyah, Chevron. What is that? Not to put uncooked food on an open flame going into Shabbos, lest you see it was supposed to be for the meal Friday night. It's not cooking fast enough. You'll raise the flame to cook it faster. A few heterim. Raw pot, right? Meat that takes a long time to cook. One raw carrot doesn't help. Carrots cook in a minute. So raw meat or covered flame or fully cooked. Or, you know, at least partially cooked. You get out of the Issur of Shehiyah. Now you can call yourself somewhat of a religious Jew. Then there's a different Issur, though. That's reheating food Friday, Shabbos morning. Now, until now, we're talking about uncooked food. If it's fully cooked, you don't have a problem of Shehiyah leaving on an uncovered flame going into Shabbos. What if you have fully cooked food and now you want to reheat it Shabbos morning? So if it's liquid, you cannot reheat it at all because it will get cooked again. The liquid, once it cools off, is considered to be uncooked. If you reheat it again, it will be now cooked. That's known as yesh bishalach habishal b'davalach. Once you're dealing with a liquid, if it's cooled off and you reheat it, you violate cooking all over again. Solid food, once it's cooked, yeah? You can reheat solid food. So soup, chevra, can you reheat soup Shabbos morning? No, no possible way. Can't serve. That's why most religious people don't serve soup Shabbos morning. Not because we don't appreciate soup in the Shabbos morning. You can't reheat soup. Unless you're going to leave the soup cooking all night. Some people do that. Leave the soup cooking all night on top of the flame. You never took it off. I put it there before Shabbos. Okay, you could do that. Yontif, people serve soup. You know, Yontif morning. Shabbos, really no way to heat up soup. Once it cools off, you can't reheat it. Solid food, chicken, kugel, can be reheated. But the Gemara says, we're afraid I might not be heating fast enough. I might come to stoke, you know, the coals. Ancient times, or I might come to raise the flame and heat it faster because I see it's not ready in time for the meal. So therefore, in order to reheat food in the Shabbos morning, you have to have a blech, but that's not good enough. It's not good enough. So it has to be solid. If it's liquid, you violate bishul all over again once it cools off. It has to be a covered flame. Otherwise, I might come to raise the flame, not to cook it faster, but to heat it faster. Yeah. And then you need two other things as well. You need two other things as well. What else do you need? You need what's known as oida b'yado and daita l'haksa. Because even if it is fully cooked, even if it is a covered flame, people are going to get confused. You're putting food on, even a covered flame Shabbos morning, people are going to start to think that you're cooking. I might get confused and think you can cook, you can't cook. It's going to get very confusing. So in order to do this, you have to have, you know, that it was there Friday night, and I never even put it really in the refrigerator. I might have taken it off to serve it, but I put it right back. What's known as oida b'yado, still in hand. You know, so you have to keep your hand on it. You can put it down on the counter, but it really should still be in your hand. And daita l'hasa. Even when I took it off, I had a mind to put it back. But if it was straight from the refrigerator, really should be no way to put it back on a blech on Shabbos morning. So that really doesn't help because it's not oida b'yado, daita l'haksa. Oida b'yado, daita l'haksa means it was there Friday, going into Shabbos. I kept it in hand, and when I took it off, I had mind to return it. If I put it in the refrigerator Friday night, you can't reheat it Shabbos morning because even though it's a covered flame, I'm not going to come to heat it faster. Chazal were afraid that it looks like you're cooking. I'm taking stuff out of the refrigerator, putting it on a flame. How can you do this? You're cooking. No, so you need that it was there Friday, and I never really took it off. What if it's in the refrigerator? Ooh, that's tricky. That's tricky. So the only way really to heat up food Shabbos morning that was in the refrigerator is two ways. You put it on the edge of the blech where it's not so hot. You can do that. Better make sure it's really not so hot, because then it's not cooking in the first place. It's not hot. Sometimes women tell me all the time, no, the warming drawer never gets hot. Are they really? I put my hand on the warming drawer. I said, it feels hot to me. Like, no, the food doesn't get too hot. I was like, really? That's because you only put it there for an hour. If you put it there for 2 days, I bet it'll come out at the same temperature. Just physics, you know, probably will have to come out at the same temperature. But okay, if it really doesn't get that hot, doesn't get that hot. It's not yet, so that is both fine. There's another heter, though, which is what most people rely on, which is, well, really, I guess, two heter. One is known as kedera agabi kedera, is that if it's a pot on top of a pot, I put my potato cooker from the refrigerator on top of the crock pot, or on top of an inverted tin pan on the blech. In YU, we like that it should be a pot full of food, not the empty tin pan. In Eretz Yisrael, they teach the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa. So all the seminary girls who end up running the Shabbos home, so they learn that it's enough with an empty inverted tin pan. In YU, that's not a YU psak. Not, it's nothing to do with YU. The Bir Alecha quotes the Prima Gadim that's not happy with that. It has to be a pot full of food. So here we prefer that it be on top of the crock pot. That's the gold standard. Put on top of the crock pot, it says in Shulchan Aruch, it's permitted if, as long as it's not liquidy. Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa says, what's the difference between a full pot and an empty pot? I'll tell you what's the difference between a full pot and an empty pot. There's a big difference, but okay, not for now. So those though, I don't protest against those who follow the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa. You take the word, the Rav Salvejik wasn't into it, but you take an inverted tin pan and put your food on top of that. That's a kedera agabi kedera. Why is that permitted? Because Chazal were never geyser in such a weird situation of a guy who's cooking a pot on top of a pot. They were never geyser. Who cooks food on top of food? That's why it makes sense that there has to be food inside. Who cooks food on top of food? You never cook food on top of another food. Food on top of an empty pot, not as unusual. That's the heter. So, Chaver, how do you heat up food Shabbos morning? Kedera agabi kedera, either on top of the crock pot or an inverted tin pan. If you happen to have a heating utensil, which is never used for cooking again, what was the fear if it's a covered flame? Yeah, but it looks like you're cooking. You're taking food out of the refrigerator. Even though this is fully cooked, you might end up taking something that's raw. What if no one ever cooks here? It's what's known as the non-adjustable hot plate. No normal people who's not a yeshiva bachur cooks on a hot plate. Hot plates are not meant for cooking. They're meant for warming food. Or if it's a warming drawer, maybe it's only meant for warming, not for cooking. There's no fear that it looks like you're cooking. As long as it's a covered flame or non-adjustable flame, then it should be permitted to. Some paiskim are leaning like that. So you have two primary ways of heating up food Shabbos morning. Putting on the blech, no. No, that's not good enough. Because you need either be other daita lahachzir, because otherwise it looks like you're cooking. You're taking stuff out of the refrigerator and heating it up Shabbos morning. So what are the two heterim that are lamaisa? Pot on top of a pot. Best if the pot, bottom pot is full of food, like a crock pot. Or at least an empty pot. The problem is there's only so much room on top of the crock pot. So in the olden days, there was a guy who came to yeshiva to market this. Now I heard it came back in a different form. But everyone has a Shabbos urn, right, up for the Shabbos water. You know, you want hot water Shabbos morning. The problem is there's no room on top of there either. No space to put like your chicken and kugel. So what he did was he created a flat Shabbos urn that had tons of space on top of the spigot on the side. There was, before that, there was what was known as the Kedera Blech. I don't know if you guys ever remember that. There was a blech that had water inside and then a pot that went on top of it. That was a pain, though, because it was like filling a swimming pool on top of your stove every Shabbos. My mother, that's what we used to have when I was growing up. We had the Kedera Blech. It was a pain. You had to like sit and fill it up with the sprinkler and then, you know, put the thing on top. Complicated. So this guy came up with the Shabbos urn that had a lot of flat room on top. He called it the Pella Plata. But he came to yeshiva to sell it to Rabbi Wilgate. He showed it to a bunch of the Rebbeim, and it didn't go anywhere. This is before the Shabbos lamp and before the, you know, all the Shabbos kuntzim. Anyway, this never made it. But lemaisa is, that's the best way to heat up food Shabbos morning, is on top of another pot. Second best is, I guess, an inverted tin pan on top of a blech. And, you know, I guess the other option is a non-adjustable hot plate. Once it's non-adjustable, it's like it's covered. You can't adjust it anyway. And no one cooks there, so there's no fear that it looks like you're cooking. You're taking uncooked food and putting it on top of a heating element because no one cooks on a hot plate. No one cooks in a warming jar. So if you have a warming jar, it has to be a covered flame. So you have to have like a lid of tin foil coming out. It should be a covered flame. And then the fact no one cooks there, you know, might be good enough. So, chevra, that's how you heat up food Shabbos morning, yeah? Top of a pot, or even an inverted tin pan, or the non-adjustable hot plate. Taking food out of the refrigerator, and it can't be liquid. It has to be solid. So in order to fulfill all these hoops, you know, they call now, just as a handy reference, five conditions of hachazara, of returning. It's really not for returning. We're talking about putting for the first time, which is taking food out of the refrigerator and putting it back on top of the fire Shabbos morning. If it's, first is it has to be fully cooked. Second is it has to be a covered flame. The third is if it's liquid, it still has to be hot. It could do liquid, but it's still got to be hot. Can't have cooled off. So again, fully cooked, liquid still, at least still hot, covered flame. Then you need oida miyado and daita lahachzir. Unless you can have one of these kuntzim that we mentioned, you know, the non-adjustable hot plate or the pot on top of the pot. But otherwise, it's got to be that it was there Friday, you never removed it, and if you did, it's still in your hand, and when you did so, you had in mind to return it. Oida miyado, daita lahachzir. How about we got it? Any questions? Masters of Hilchos Shabbos. Okay. So one of the conditions of Hachazar is daita lahachzir. You have to have a mind to put it back. What if I don't like you? So what do? I want to ruin your Shabbos. You baveled me, you stabbed me in the back during the week. So I come to your house, I take all your food off the blech, put it on the floor, and leave. Now, you can only put the food back if it's daita lahachzir. You had a mind to put it back. I took it off, and I had no das lahachzir. I didn't have a mind to return it. All right, you invited me over, and I don't know, the meal isn't going so well, or whatever. So I take your food off. I say, ha-ha! When I took it off, I didn't have a mind to put it back. What do you say there? Ein adam oyser davar she'eino shaloi? Can you say, I can't oser your food because mashava is involved? Sir Bekiva Eger says, yeah, you can't oser someone else's food when mashava is involved. Ein adam oyser davar she'eino shaloi? Ein adam oyser davar she'eino shaloi? Bekiva Eger actually thinks it's dependent on this machlok between Tosis and the Rash. Do we say adam oyser davar she'eino shaloi? Mashava is involved according to the Rash. We do. According to Tosis, whenever mashava plays any role at all, we don't. So Rabbi Vega says, oh, so you can't ask the guy's pot because ain't other moisture davar she'eino shaloi. Or what I like to call the unhelpful husband. God, husband walks into the kitchen to try and help. He's making up to his wife for something that he did wrong, forgetting the anniversary or something. So he decides, you know what, I'm going to help out Friday night. So he walks into the kitchen and he starts taking stuff off the blech to serve. What das does he have? He has idiot das. He has no das. He's stam das. He doesn't know what he's thinking. He's a behemoth. He's just trying to help. So is that called daita lahachzir? We say, ain't daita lahachzir. I mean, you know what he thought. You know? Do you say, ain't other moisa davar she'eino shaloi? So Bekiva Eger says, yeah, you say in that situation, ain't other moisa davar she'eino shaloi. Rav Shach, though, and he thinks it's dependent on this machlokes, he tosses in the Rash, says, well, what if mashav is involved? Do we say, other moisa davar she'eino shaloi? According to mashav is involved, ain't other moisa davar she'eino shaloi? He thinks we pass in like tosses whenever mashav plays any role at all. Ain't other moisa davar she'eino shaloi? I cannot ask your pass by taking them off, having not in mind to return. Rav Shach and the Aviezer disagrees with the Bekiva Eger. All the Hilchos Shabbos books quote this machlokes, you know, Rav Shach and Rav Bekiva Eger. Rav Shach in his commentary in the Rambam's Hilchos Shabbos, Oyser Daud over here, disagrees with the Bekiva Eger. And he says, no, come on. He says here the Machshava doesn't play a role in the Iser. Like we said before, Machshava could play two different roles. Sometimes Machshava is a condition, sometimes Machshava plays the Etzem HaIser. Rav Shach argues that here, Machshava doesn't play either one of these roles. Rabbi Kiva Eger claims, well, it depends on Tosis and the Rash. What if Machshava is tangential? What if the Machshava, you know, is a secondary, is conditional? What if it's the Etzem Iser? According to Tosis, it plays any role at all. And Eidom is the definition of Shulah. Rav Shach claims, no, that's not the role of Machshava here. Machshava here plays the role of solving a problem. See, when you remove it from the flame, that's what Avastered it immediately. Now, you're going to put it back. It looks like you're cooking if you put it back. Unless it's a continuation of the first time that it was on top of the flame on Shabbos. Here, you take it off, you put it back. Or he takes stuff out of the refrigerator and put it back. How do I know that this is fully cooked and this is, you know, and this is raw? This you can't put there, this you can't put there. It looks like you're cooking every time. So the minute you take it off, it should have been a problem. Just if you have a mind to return it, that redefines your taking it off the flame and makes it permitted to return it because it doesn't look like you ever removed it in the first place because I always had a mind to put it back. But it's not that you need machshava to answer the pot. The machshava is what solves the problem of removing it. So then, the machshava plays like a third role. It's not that it's fundamental to the Easter. It's not even conditional to the Easter. It solves the problem of the Easter. It's the band-aid to the Easter. But if you don't have the band-aid, the Easter stands on its own. It's the action that asers over here for moving the pot from the flame. You can solve it if daita la'atzi, you had a mind to return it, because then the removing is not a removing. But if you don't have daita la'atzi, then the removing itself, it's an action. So he claims, like, if I remove your pot, I have asered them. It's the action of removing it. Here the machshava plays a third role. It's a band-aid. It's not fundamental. It's not even conditional. It's a band-aid. It solves. It reinterprets your actions. But it's not fundamental to the Easter or even conditional to the Easter. The Easter is the removing of the pot. That's Rav Shach's argument. So Rav Shach says, if I remove your pot, it would be asur. According to Rav Shach, then, what would you say about the stam balabayas? The stam husband who's trying to help out, who's mindless. Said, should asur. Should be asur. According to Rabbi Akiva Eiger, the machshava plays a role in the Easter. Ain't the maisa, davar shenu shaloi. Ah, so I can't asur your pots by taking them off the fire. But according to Rav Shach, it's the etzem maisa of removing it that asur. It's just the band-aid. You can reinterpret it through your machshava. If you have a balabayas who's not thinking, he didn't reinterpret it, so then it remains also. This all comes to a head in the following scenario. It happens all the time in Eretz Yisrael. Have you ever been somewhere in Eretz Yisrael, usually in the Shtachim, and the power goes out over Shabbos? Remember, I stayed in the Gawil. I stayed at Alon Shvut. I remember this happening a few. Yeah, that was when Alon Shvut was like smaller before it expanded and doubled in size. But the power would go out over Shabbos. Problem is, what do you do with the cholent now? The power went out. Friday night. What do you do with your cholent? No problem. My power went out, I'll move it to you. If the power goes out everywhere, there's nothing to talk about. But if the power goes out of my house, I'll move it to your house. But you can only move it to someone else's house if you had died to Lahatse. The fire went out. I didn't remove it from the flame, but the fire went out. Can I move it to a different flame? We need died to Lahatse here. But I didn't have died to Lahatse. But I didn't have died to remove it either. Sir Shlomo Zalman, Rabbi Yashav claimed, this depends on the Machlok, Sir Bekiva Eger. And Rav Shach, according to Bekiva Eger, it's the daito lahachzir, you know, that prohibits it. If I didn't have if it's the das to remove it, that prohibits it. Daito lahachzir, you know, solves the problem. But it's the you have to have das to remove it. That's why ain't on the mice. Davar shenu shaloi. If I remove your pots, I haven't asked you from returning them. So to be here, I didn't have a mind to remove the pot. The husband didn't have a mind to remove the pot. I didn't know what he was doing. He was just removing tinfoil from the blech. Here, the power went out. Shouldn't create a problem. According to Rav Shach, no. It's the fact that it got removed from the flame with your intention, without your intention, you removed it. It's no longer a connection to the flame. You're going to return it now. I'm going to say people are taking raw food out. It looks like you're cooking now for the first time on Shabbos with raw food. So you can't do that. So you cannot move it to a new flame. The fantastic machlekes is machlekes Shlomo Zalman or Rabbi Yashav. Shlomo Zalman is Mako, Rabbi Yashav is Machmir. If you have, we once had this, Shaila. You have the crock pot. Electricity goes out. Can you move it to someone else's stove? So that depends on this machlekes. You know, Yashim Shlomo Zalman is what, which is really machlekes of Rekiv Eger and Rav Shach. What asks the pot from? You know, why do you need daita lahachzir? According to Rekiv Eger, because the das to remove it is what plays a role in, you know, in the iser of hachazar, returning. But if it's according to Rav Shach, no, it's the action. So even if you had no das to remove it, the action that got removed is enough. It can be reinterpreted, it can be solved if you had a mind to return it, but it's the action itself that answers it. So, Chevra, getting back over here to our situation, maybe that's what the two opinions in the Ramban are arguing about. Meaning, what role does Nichus of the Balabayas play in Kelayim? Is the Nichus of the Balabayas, they're arguing about the Machlekes, the Tosis, and the Rash. You know, what is this Machlekes, and what is the role of Nichus of the Balabayas? According to Tosfos, it could be, you know, Nichus of the Balabayas is tangential. But it's conditional. Meaning maybe the whole Isur of Kelayim is caused by the action, by the Kelayim mixing together. But it's a condition that the Balabayas have to be happy about it. Or it could be that no, it's when the Balabayas are happy about it, that's the whole Isur. If it's just conditional, maybe other Moisei Davish in the Shalom, as the Rash said. Meaning maybe you can ask for something that doesn't belong to you. But by Kelayim, where the whole story is Machshava, it's not just conditional. then Eino Moisa Davar Sheni Shaloi. As opposed to the Paraduma, right? If I work your Paraduma, I can aser it on you. And I can create it, you know, make it a worked Paraduma, because the Machshava is only conditional. It's a condition. The real Iser is the Malacha, but the Machshava plays a role. So maybe if the Machshava plays a role, all the Moisa Davar Sheni Shaloi. When the Machshava is the whole story, Eino the Moisa Davar Sheni Shaloi. So maybe what the two deos over here in the Ramban are arguing about is what role does the Nichus of the Baal HaBayis play? According to the first opinion in the Ramban, that is the whole Iser. That's the whole Iser. So that's why the Ramban says this is called Garmi, because there's no Iser to speak of, you know, until there's Nichus of the Baal HaBayis. As opposed to the second Teretz in the Ramban, he had to come up with a whole different answer, that it's only when they grow later on together, because the Nichusa is not what, you know, drives the Iser. It's a condition. So, you know, you can't call that Garmi because it's missing a condition. Once they mix together, if the Iser was mixing together, that should have been enough. The minute they mix together, that's Adam Amazek. The fact that the grapes mix with the grain, that should have created the Iser alone. The fact that you need a Chutzal Baal HaBayis is only conditional. That shouldn't, you know, hold back the Iser necessarily from taking place and label it as Garmi. It's only because it's when they later on grow together, then I'll have, you know, the Iser. But before they grow together, there's no Iser. But maybe what they're arguing about is not only the, you know, the nature, the Iser of Kalaim, is it mixing, is it growing? What role does Nichus of the Baal HaBayis play? According to the first Teretz, this Nichus of the Baal HaBayis holds back the whole Iser from taking place. Not just as a condition, it never gets off the ground. The Iser is when the Baal HaBayis are happy about it. According to the second Teretz, maybe the Nichusa is just a condition, but it's not part and parcel of the Iser of Kalaim. All right. Maybe that's what's going on. Chaver, let's get back. We'll just start the next sugya, and then we'll have to continue the Mitzvah Shem tomorrow. Our Gemara again had two possible explanations for our Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "Hashutfin sherosu lasos mechitzi," of two partners that have share a field, and they want to split the field. So the first understanding of the Gemara is we're talking about a field that's big enough for them to split. Any one of them petitions to split it, they have to split it unilaterally. Each one is going to end up with four amas, you have to split it. What did they agree to do together? Build a wall. So then you build a wall in the middle. What did they agree to do together? Build a wall. And the Gemara brought a raya from our Brisa, we've been discussing forever, about Kelayim, that mechitza means a wall, means a guda. What do you see from the fact, though, that they have to agree together to build a wall? You see that Hezek Re'ia Lav Shmei Hezek. The fact that I'm watching you in your property is not called damaging. If it would, one party unilaterally could petition, could force the other party to build a wall. Because otherwise, you're damaging me. From the fact that we have to do it together, what can one petition force the other one to do? Split the field. Because it's big enough that you can, each one will end up with 4 amas by 4 amas. You can force your friend to split it. What are you being such an auction? Split the field. What did they agree to do together, which is something that our Mishnah says, Hashutzvin Shiratu, they built together, they built a wall together. Why can I force you to build a wall? Must be because Hezek Re'ia Lav Shmei Hezek. It's not considered to be a Hezek. So Gemara then has goes through a series of proofs back and forth. Is that true? Hezek Re'ia is Lav Shmei Hezek, or is Hezek Re'ia, you know, Shmei Hezek? Is the fact that I'm watching you in your field considered a damage? Or is it not considered a damage? Because really, you could have learned our Mishnah differently. What did they agree to do together? Split the field. Maybe that's what they agreed to do together. The fact that they built a wall, that, once we split the field, you have to build a wall, because Hezek Re'ia Shmei Hezek. So our Mishnah, you can really read them two different ways. The Gemara goes back and forth about this. Maybe it means that we agreed to split the field. Building the wall, you have to build a wall, because two adjacent fields. You're watching me, that's a real Hezek, and I can force you to build the wall, because Hezek Re'ia Shmei Hezek. So we have these two ways of reading our Mishnah that go back and forth around the issue of whether Hezek Re'ia Shmei Hezek, not Shmei Hezek. So Gemara brings a series of proofs, Simen, Gina, Koiso, Koifin, Chok, and Chalonis, and Rav Nachman, about whether or not Hezek Re'ia Shmei Hezek or Lav Shmei Hezek. So we'll begin the first proof. We'll have to continue with the discussion tomorrow. Says the Brice over here, Tashma. Well, it's really going back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, V'chein begina. Just like over here, you build the wall. Be'emtza. So too, if you have two gardens that are next to each other, or a garden that was split, you have to build a wall, and you build a wall in the middle. V'chein begina. So what do you see? The gina is not being split. The gina is two adjacent ginas, one to the other. The chayim begina, if this is true, not only the two adjacent fields, which have to be, the field that was on Beshutfus that was later split, you have two adjacent fields, you have to build a wall there too. That implies that Hezek Riyah, Shmei Hezek, the chayim begina. If you have to build a wall, so it must be Hezek Riyah, Shmei Hezek. If you have to build it in the Gina. So Gemara says, no, maybe it's not because of Hezek Riyah Shmei Hezek, it's because of Ayin Hara. Shiny Kedar Rabbi Abba. Dama Rabbi Abba, Gina Shiny, I'm sorry, the Gina is different. Kedama Rabbi Abba, Dama Rabbi Abba, Ravuna Marav. Also, the Adam Lama Beste Chaver Beshoshi Omedes Bekoy Maisel. You're not allowed to stand in the adjacent field to your friends while it's growing produce because you're going to damage it through an Ayin Hara. But it says v'chein. Our Mishnah is discussing Hezek Riyah, or building not because of Ayin Hara. Now, how can you say v'chein begina when you're talking about the gina to switch to talking about Ayin Hara? So Gemara says, how can you switch topics in the middle of the Mishnah? Says the Gemara v'chein katoni agvil v'gozis. Really, all the v'chein meant was in terms of the thickness of the walls. The thickness of the wall is the same, but li'olam it's for a whole different reason. The reason why you have to build the wall in the gina is because of Ayin Hara, not because of Hezek Re'iyah Shmei Hezek. So, Chevra, we have to discuss, what is Ayin Hara in this context? What is our attitude towards Ayin Hara? We're not going to get to that tomorrow. That's a bigger discussion. We'll have to have that discussion. What is our attitude towards Ayin Hara? But how does that relate to Hezek Re'iyah Shmei Hezek? You know, and what's the, how do you read this whole Gemara over here? There's a Peledik or Rambam. All the Mefarshim talk about the Rambam. The Rambam seems to be against the Gemara. No surprise there, but we have to figure out how the Rambam read the Gemara and how we're going to fit the Rambam back into the Gemara whole story. All right, so Chevra, we'll get started in tomorrow with this.